Welcome back to The Monitor. My name is Mark Babawi. My co-host is Emily Griffin. Our engineer is Robert Gartner. Our final guest for this week's show is Paul Paz y Minio. He is the Director of Outreach and Online Strategy at Amazon Watch. Their website is linked from ours. You can go to amazonwatch.org. Paul joined Amazon Watch in 2007. He's a student of international affairs. He's got a degree from George Washington University and has done all sorts of volunteering with other organizations before that. You can get his full bio. Is linked from our website. You can also follow him on Twitter at Paul Paz, P-A-U-L-P-A-Z, or Z, as I used to say a few years ago. Paul, welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Thank you.
It's good to have you on. For people who haven't caught up yet with this case or who don't know the history of this 20-year battle in the Ecuadorian Amazon, before we get to who took how much money from whom and what they were planning to do, just lay out the details of the case for us first.
Sure. So Texaco, which is now merged with Chevron, was the first oil company to drill for oil in the Amazon in the 1960s. They arrived in the Ecuadorian Amazon and began a process of drilling over decades there. While they were doing it, instead of using industry standards and what would have been legal in the United States, they wantonly and deliberately dumped 18 billion gallons of toxic foundation waters. These are the waters that are extracted before you drill the crude. They're laced with heavy metals, benzene, other carcinogens. And instead of reinjecting into the earth, which is the standard practice, Texaco decided that they could save $3 a barrel by simply dumping these toxic waters into open-air, unlined pits in the rainforest. So they created close to 1,000 of these pits, extracted crude for decades, made money off Ecuadorians, and then left the country and left behind a toxic disaster causing cancer and affecting up to 30,000 people. Now, they left in 1992, and when they did, the indigenous communities sued them in a civil suit in New York. That was, at the time, the headquarters, because at that point it was still Texaco.
Mm-hmm.
After years of fighting and Texaco arguing the case had to be held in Ecuador, Texaco won that battle, and the judge in the United States determined that the case should be held there, and Texaco agreed that if the case were going back to Ecuador, they would abide by whatever decision the Ecuadorian courts had. Now, at the time, the Ecuadorian government was very favorable towards oil companies, which is part of the reason that Texaco wanted it there in the first place. However, when Chevron merged with Texaco and that case began in Ecuador, the situation had changed. The government of Rafael Correa came into power, and they were not beholden to U.S. interests as before. So a 10-year trial took place in Ecuador, the most litigated trial in the history of the country, hundreds of thousands of pages of evidence, reports, etc., submitted to the court. And after all that time, the Ecuadorian court decided that Chevron was liable for $19 billion to clean up the toxic waste and provide health support for the communities that were affected. Now, when the Supreme Court of Ecuador upheld that decision in 2013, they cut the amount in half, because half of that was a punitive damage. It was actually $9.5 billion, and then the Ecuadorian verdict said, if Chevron apologizes to the people of Ecuador for creating this disaster in the first place, it will stay at $9.5, and if they refuse to apologize, it will be doubled. And that part of the decision was ruled unconstitutional. So it stands at $9.5 billion. However, Chevron knew from day one that they had no opportunity to win in Ecuador. The evidence against them was so overwhelming. In fact, they admitted publicly to deliberately dumping the waste in the first place as Texaco. So what they began to do was a retaliatory attack on the government of Ecuador, its judicial system, the people involved, the people who had suffered, their lawyers, and anyone who spoke out against their case. And what they did was they brought the case, a case, back to the United States, to the very same district where they had argued shouldn't hear the case, and they sued in what's essentially a slap suit. They used a RICO law, an anti-racketeering law that was created to go after the mob, to say that the verdict against them was a product of fraud and bribery, and therefore should not be honored. Now, the judge in this case, Judge Lewis Kaplan, he issued a global injunction before even hearing a shred of evidence, saying that the Ecuadorians and their lawyers could not enforce this verdict in Ecuador anywhere in the world, which obviously is outrageous, because it's a U.S. judge saying Canada, U.K., France, Australia, none of you can recognize this Ecuadorian verdict. well beyond, of course, the authority of a federal judge in New York to do, and it was quickly slapped down by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals right away. But then Chevron continued with its RICO case, and over the course of the next year, they built a case based on circumstantial evidence, and now what we're learning for sure was false testimony from a key witness who they paid up to $2 million to testify. Chevron's entire story, entire case, is based on an allegation that the verdict, of that $9.5 billion verdict that I mentioned before, was not written by the judge in the case, that it was written by another judge who was bribed, allegedly, by the Ecuadorian and their lawyers, $500,000, to ghostwrite the verdict. The problem is, there's turned out to be no evidence of any ghostwritten verdict, and now that judge, Guerra, who testified that he was offered a bribe, in a separate hearing, has now admitted that he perjured himself, that he never ghostwrote it, that he was never offered a $300,000 nor a $500,000 bribe, that he has zero evidence of any ghostwritten verdict, and that he was paid by Chevron, and he offered them a better story in order to get more money. So their house of cards has completely fallen apart, and the bad news for Chevron is that the Ecuadorians and their lawyers are now seeking to enforce that 9.5, which is now $10 billion with interest, to enforce that verdict in Canada. And the Canadian Supreme Court, just a couple months ago, ruled unanimously in favor of the Ecuadorians that they can pursue to seize Chevron's assets. Chevron holds about $15 billion worth of assets in Canada. And if they are successful there, Chevron will be forced to liquidate and turn over those assets to the Ecuadorians to finally cover the verdict from that stems from pollution that began in the 1960s. And what's important to remember here is that that pollution is still killing people today. People are still contracting cancer. They're still being forced to drink water and bathe in water that is contaminated daily because we're talking about the rainforest. When it rains, that water goes through those pits, travels into streams, carrying toxic chemicals, and affects the people living there. So the estimates are that up to 10,000 people will contract cancer when all is said and done. And that's assuming that they actually begin to clean up the mess that's there. So it's one of the worst environmental tragedies and travesties of justice that has ever been perpetrated on people. And it's kind of amazing that more people don't know about this story.
Well, that's why we have you on, because, I think this is, as you said, the number of lives affected, the number of people already killed, and the countless others who are going to be impacted by this is just it's shocking.
Yeah.
On one level. And then the games that Chevron has been playing to try and get out of their responsibility. I know that it was a Texaco thing initially, but Chevron bought Texaco in 2001. And so any company doing its due diligence ought to look into the background of the company that they're acquiring and make sure that they have enough assets to cover the liabilities. Otherwise, they shouldn't buy them.
Exactly. And we were there at the shareholder meeting before the merger went through. And we stood up and held up photos of Ecuador and said Chevron should not move ahead with this because of Texaco's liability there until they force that company to clean up its mess. And it's no coincidence that the current CEO and chairman of the board of Chevron, John Watson, was a principal architect of that merger between Texaco and Chevron. And since he took over in 2010, Chevron's tenor in this case has become incredibly aggressive. They have sued everyone attached to this. They tried to attack environmental groups like ours, Rainforest Action Network, Earth Rights, all these other groups that have spoken out on behalf of the Ecuadorians. And what they've done, the real perversion of justice here is they have used this RICO decision because they got a decision in their favor from the judge that I mentioned before, and they've used that one decision to attack anyone who has said anything about their contamination in Ecuador. The contamination that still exists, the contamination that they admitted to creating. And now they're able to turn the story to say, oh, a judge ruled against the Ecuadorians. That was a fraud, so you shouldn't pay any attention to that. But the reality is no court anywhere, not even in New York, has ever suggested that Chevron is not responsible for massive contamination in the Ecuadorian Amazon, that the trial in New York forbade any evidence of actual contamination in its hearings. In fact, I was in the courtroom when they would strike from the record the word contamination when a witness would offer it as part of their testimony because Chevron didn't want to have the evidence in front of them. And the irony of this exposing of their witness, who has now admitted that he was bribed, is that it took place in a separate proceeding that Chevron initiated. They've been trying to force the government of Ecuador to cover their liability by suing them under a bilateral trade agreement. This is a common method used to force smaller companies to essentially bend to the will of large corporations. And so what they've said is, in this trial, which is before a tribunal appointed by The Hague, which is completely undemocratic, by the way. It doesn't include the Ecuadorians. It doesn't even allow them to be in the room. But during the course of this trial, separate from the RICO case, their witness, Guerra, took the stand, and under cross-examination, this is when he admitted, yes, he lied in the RICO case. Yes, he was offered money to offer his testimony in New York. And the real criminals who are more likely to be going to jail in this case are actually Chevron and their lawyers, because it is illegal to pay a witness to testify in U.S. federal court. Even worse, if you know that the testimony that witness is providing is false. And in both cases, we believe this to be true. So we're expecting and we're calling for an investigation by the Department of Justice into Chevron's actions here. If they're able to pressure people in the way that they've done, with zero evidence actually against them, and essentially paying for justice in their process, that would prevent any other group from holding corporations accountable for their mm-hmm. violations of human rights and the environment. So it's a very, very important case if we're actually to hold corporate power in check in the United States.
Well, I think it's hugely important. You've done well, Paul, calling out people by name, because I think we should name them. There's a couple of more names I want to call out here. One is the New York federal judge, Lewis Kaplan.
Yes.
What do we know about Judge Kaplan's connections with Chevron or donations for campaigns? Or what? I'm sure you've done some digging.
Yes. Kaplan, he failed to acknowledge before he took the case that he does hold Chevron stock through a mutual fund, which doesn't mean that he is not able to take the case, but it is something that he should have disclosed beforehand. In addition, Kaplan assigned the case to his own court instead of allowing it to go through the normal process where it would be assigned randomly. He actually suggested that Chevron file the RICO suit in the first place. And Kaplan, as I mentioned before, he didn't allow evidence of the contamination. And when I spent over a week in the courtroom, and I watched him treat the Ecuadorians in, frankly, a disgusting manner. He called them so-called plaintiffs. He attacked them. He sometimes cross-examined them for Chevron's lawyers when he was frustrated with the way it was going for Chevron. So it was biased from start to finish. And another important point is that he refused to allow a jury in this case. Chevron famously sued Stephen Donziger and the Ecuadorian lawyers for $60 billion. That would have been the largest individual liability in a lawsuit ever, $60 billion. And the day before the trial began, they dropped their monetary damages because in order to proceed that way, they would have had to have had a jury, which, of course, they didn't want and Kaplan didn't want. So they dropped that. And then the Donziger and the Ecuadorians appealed to have a jury anyway, and Kaplan refused it. So now Kaplan wrote a 500-page verdict. He refers to outtakes of a documentary, which we've shown have been edited. He refers to emails that he forced the Ecuadorians and their lawyers to turn over. In a very amazing and unprecedented violation of attorney-client privilege and the First Amendment rights of independent journalists, this judge has allowed Chevron to get access to every single shred of documentation going back 20 years in this case. And yet, despite having all of that, they didn't produce one hard piece of evidence showing a ghostwritten verdict. There was no copies of the verdict on any of the computers of the Ecuadorians. There were no copies of the verdict on the computer of the judge who lied and said that he ghostwrote it in the first place.
This is Judge Alberto Guerra.
Alberto Guerra.
Yeah.
He handed over his computer to the government of Ecuador, and they hired one of the best forensic analysts in the world, who analyzed his computer and said, There is no evidence of a verdict, and furthermore, the computer that did have the verdict on it has one Word document that was opened and saved several hundred times over the course of many months, and nothing else was attached to it. So it completely, the forensic evidence itself blows Chevron's case out of the water. All they have left is the testimony of Guerra, who, I should mention, had less than $200 in his bank account when Chevron approached him and said, "We will pay you to testify." He flew to to Chicago. He met with Randy Mastro, who was one of the principal lawyers at Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, who also, by the way, I believe was vice mayor under Giuliani in New York. He offered him $20,000 in cash in a briefcase for his testimony in Chicago. So this was bought and paid for, but the problem is Chevron got a buffoon. He had no legs to his story, and it completely fell apart. So they find themselves in the terrible situation now of saying to the press, "Yes, we knew that that Guerra wasn't a great guy, and you know we're not trying to defend his character or his credibility, except for in this one case where we're sure he's telling the truth, despite the fact that right. we paid him $2 million to do so."
Well, based on what you've said, Paul, I suspect that they're going to sue him to get their money back. That would be kind of par for the course.
It would be interesting because that would expose them further. So I think they're kind of stuck. They're paying him $12,000 a month today in a house they bought for him with a car in Florida for his entire family. And if they stop doing that, are they going to admit, "Yeah, we're not doing it now because he lied," and in which case they would say, "Yeah, our story doesn't stand"? Or are they going to continue paying it even though he's now admitted that what he told them wasn't true? It's a terrible situation for them, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it unfolds with the Department of Justice, because there's clearly cases of wrongdoing here that should be investigated.
Well, I know you're going to stay on top of it, and as things come to the next level of development, keep me posted, and would love to have you back on and share the details.
Thank you. I'd love to. I'm sorry for talking so fast.
No, you did quite a lot. You did what you had to do, and I know you have to run off and do something else, so I really appreciate you being with us and come back when things develop.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That was Paul Paz-Emilio. He's the Director of Outreach and Online Strategy at Amazon Watch. Their website is amazonwatch.org. And before Paul, we had